Welcome to the School Free Life podcast. Today, I'm joined by the incredible Kirsten Kobe, who brings so much grounded wisdom to the conversation around parenting teens and tweens.
I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I've been following you for a while and I love your content. I don't have teens yet, but I feel like I'm close to having a teen, even though my son's only 9. And everything that you share, I'm just like, oh my God, I feel so like, it feels less scary or something. I'm just like, yeah. Yeah.
Good. I'm so glad that's your experience. And I mean, you're right there on the edge. That's sort of when the tween stuff can start shining through with attitude, opinions, just like a different sort of another version of them kind of, you know, coming online.
I'm fully witnessing it right now. I'm like, whoa, who's this person? So I guess today, the way I do my podcast, I just love to have a conversation. It's really unstructured and things will just come through as they come through, and I'll ask some questions, but I'd just love to hear about just you and your work. And I'm assuming you're a mother. I don't even know.
When I was a teenager is when I kind of started working with teens, and also when I realized I'd probably be doing this instead of being a mother. And ended up
I love that.
Flowing like that for the rest of my life. Yeah, I was fortunate to meet someone. I mean, it would be a beautiful journey, and part of me would absolutely love it and has been called, but what's called me more, and my husband too, who also has worked with teens in wilderness therapy for a long time, not anymore, but how we can be here for the teens that are already here, and that communal parenting that I personally believe is so important for not only just getting through it and surviving, but really arriving and thriving and having more than just one or two people on board. It really does feel like, especially with the teen years, it's such a big, big time with so much change. And teens are looking out at the world going, where's my broader community? Who are the other people? Who sees me? What do I want to do? And what do I want to bring? And really a lot of trial and experimentation, right? It's play. And it's one of the things that I have such an issue with school is that it really stifles. I'm talking about typical modern schooling, right? It just puts a lid on so many teens and their spark and their glow. And it's detrimental to not only the teenager, but the family and society as a whole. So this has been just a big calling for me since my teen years. That's, again, when I started working with parents of teens, and it's been the light of my life. So,
oh my God, I'm so excited for our chat. That just added another dimension. My friend and I were just talking about this yesterday because we're both mothers. My friend has 5 kids. I've got 3 kids. So we had like so many kids with us yesterday, and we were just like getting bummed out. We're like, we're doing the job of a village. Like, where are, you know, and we have a really great village here, like compared to a lot of other places, but we still really feel exhausted by it. And we're like, you know, our kids need mentors that aren't parents necessarily, aunties, uncles, like other people in the community to hold space that we can't hold because we can't do freaking everything. I love that. I'm so excited.
Yeah, no one.
Yeah.
I mean, no one felt that way. It sounds like you had a lot of kids with you. And yeah, it really is too much. And not because it's wrong or bad, or it's not even negative. It is just literally so much to hold, the like beauty, the messes and everything in between.
And ourselves.
And yourselves. Exactly. Yeah. Cause we know you're raising kids and you're going through your own evolution as well as they do. And the teen years, of course, bring up everything that might be left over or not even known. Right. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And I remember the aunties in my life when I was a young person, specifically the ones who actually didn't have children. And they were some of my favorite people. And there were also some that were parents that were also my favorite people. So it's not like one is better. It's just they all matter. And it's really about that right person when you're, or those right people in the community that can hold your child the way that you would hold your child, just slightly different because, you're not the mom or the dad. Teens are naturally going to pull away for their moms and dads to grow and expand and move beyond their community.
Yeah. But they still need to be held even when they don't think that they do.
Oh, absolutely. By their community and by their parents, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And you can see your child in a way that nobody else ever really can. And that's just forever true.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's so true. And I guess like, with the rise of, I feel like people are coming back to this, or maybe sometimes I'm like, do I live in a bubble, or are people actually realizing this? And I guess it's through accounts like yours and other people who share really, you know, life-changing information, really, that support parents to make different decisions that, you know, help them support their children and their family unit and, you know, whatever it is that they're trying to heal so that their kids can have a better experience of adulthood. Yeah. A more integrated experience.
I mean, I think some people are, I mean, I grew up on a farm. I did go to kind of regular school, but it was, you know, in the 80s and 90s, long time ago. And the world is so different now. And for some kids, going to school is kind of like a sanctuary, or maybe the structure feels great. So I never want to really discredit that or discount that. However, what we know now with what children need with regard to sleep and play, I mean, we always knew this. This is just like timeless stuff that, you know, now the studies show it, but it's like, oh my goodness, we don't need these studies, right? But we've got them now. Play and nature and sunshine and movement. I mean, we have never been in this country in such a horrible state of health. And I look to where children are spending most of their time. And for most children, it's sitting in school and being instructed on not only outdated information, but irrelevant and not even accurate information.
Yeah.
If we're being, and they know it now, because that's the thing with teens. They're like doing their own research. They're gaining critical thinking skills. And they're like, this is absolute
garbage. They're on ChatGPT. They're like, excuse me.
They're like, this is garbage. Yeah. Why am I learning this? And then they get in trouble for asking that question, when really it's an important question. We should all be asking that question.
Totally.
Because what's coming around the bend is nothing like what we've been in at all. And even if that weren't true, the time alone spent inside and when teens specifically have to wake up makes absolutely no sense and is detrimental to well-being.
Absolutely. I think I read a statistic a while ago that in the US, and it's probably very similar here in Australia, that the average child spends 4 minutes of unstructured play outside per day. That's... might be a little bit more in Australia because we don't get snow and things like that. Yeah. But that I was shocked. I knew it would be low, but that was shocking. And it's because they're inside on devices, just at school all day or getting ready for school the next day. It's just, crazy. And so obviously there is so many health problems because of that alone. And then we're not even bringing into the fact that they've got social media and all of these other things that just aren't inspiring them or to move their body or like be with themselves or create. It's crazy. So scary. That's why we don't do school.
I mean, that makes sense. 4 minutes, that's absurd. I mean, that's, it's absurd. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. It's of course not going to be balanced. Mm-hmm. And even with tech and social media, there's a way to work with these tools properly where teenagers can build businesses and make money and have fun and be inspired if they're not so freaking exhausted and using it as a way to disconnect and like recover from their honestly nightmare of a day. At least the teens I meet, they're just so exhausted from it all. And it's interesting because of course in some other countries it's like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful gift to be able to go to school for free and, you know, learn how to read and all this stuff. But in this country, we're actually not even ranking really high. Yeah. And it's all consumed by tests. And we know that some of the most incredible evolutions and innovations come from kids that don't think type A.
Yeah.
That aren't good test takers.
Yeah.
And we also know that all that genius studying, right? That everyone's a genius, and then it slowly fades. And it's not because that's what's natural, it's because of what we are creating.
Yeah.
The environments that aren't supportive to what's natural.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's spirit.
So scary. It's so scary. It's funny. I've tried really hard not to compare kids in my community who are homeschooled with kids that aren't. Like, I really try not to go there because I fully get why people do school and that they have to. And I know some great school kids, but sometimes we're in an environment where there's a lot of school kids and there's also our little homeschool crew. And often the energy or the frequency is significantly different and the way that they're playing is significantly different. And an example is the other day I was at the local pool And we were there before 3 p.m. and it was really chill. And, you know, obviously there weren't many people there. And as soon as school ended, it just filled up with people, which is great. You know, it was so good that kids are going to the pool. But the way that they were playing was so intense, like full dysregulation and really, really violent. And my kids were like, what's going on? Like, why are these no awareness of the people around them, splashing kids, teasing them? I was like, whoa. And I could just feel the dysregulation like in the air. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, wow, these kids are fully like blowing off steam. Like they have so much steam to blow off that they can't even control their bodies. Thank goodness they were outside doing that, right? But yeah, it was just a real big aha moment, a very big like affirming moment for me. I'm like, oh, I just don't want to have to deal with that every day.
Right. Yeah. And we don't, and you know, there's, so it's like the part of you that's not wanting to be judgmental or in that comparison part of the brain. And at the same time, we are watching and witnessing and taking in information that we're seeing. And it's to not believe our own eyes and our own experiences would just be not healthy and not helpful. Right. So it's
totally.
You're seeing something that's real and that's happening. And I imagine if you were there every day, you'd see the same thing every day. And yeah, there's a wildness that does get just so suppressed that eventually does have to express, of course.
Yeah, and, totally.
And I mean, kids are made to move. And if they can't do that all day, their bodies know what they need. And unfortunately, yeah, there's some of this extra that then has to like quickly come out almost, it feels like. I always like to share when I talk about this topic that if anyone listening is like, there's no way that I could ever do anything other than send my kid to a regular school, government school, current school model, whatever we want to call it. And I think it's really important, especially in the teen years, to realize that even if that's true for whatever reason, because that is some people's reality, you can still go, oh my gosh, when your teen complains or has a hard day or is like, I hate school. Why do I have to go? Right? This is a really common conversation. There's still a way to engage that can create connection, even if you can't change anything about your situation. And that is by saying, you're right. It makes no sense. What's the hardest part about it for you? And that in the teen years, because right, the traditional common response is, I know it's hard, but you have to go.
Yeah.
I know it sucks, but you have to go.
Yeah.
That is not helpful.
You have to get an education. You have to do this. It'll be over soon.
Right. Just two more years. Oh my God. If I had to go to high school right now, for 1 month, I would probably have an anxiety attack. Like I would have to prepare for this. I would really have to work to be able to make it through. And I was actually very into school as a teen because I had such a kind of neglectful home life that structure and that presence that I got from teachers, and I had great teachers, was helpful for me. So I want to make sure people understand too, that I'm coming at this not from I'm a homeschooled kid. Like there's one way to do it. There's a lot of factors and nuance here. And like I said, for some kids, it works for them. And there's all these other pieces and parts that we really need to honor, especially in almost 2025 and where the world is going and what we're going to need. But that's how parents can respond. If your kid's struggling, don't try to fix it. Be like, this is absolute madness. Like, what's the hardest part for you? And before you know it, you're going to hear about what it's like for them. And maybe you'll even see them get to a place where they find the positives of it, even though you haven't told them to, because that's what we do when we're allowed to have our process and be in our grief or our pain or our frustration, no matter how old we are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. It's like inviting them in, like connection before correction. I love that saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're offering you a doorway. Parents so often, right? It's like in the tween and teen years, how do I connect with my teen? And like, they don't want to talk to me. It's like, well, probably because you're not listening to them. And I don't mean that meanly, but they're giving you doorways and they look like complaining and they look like opinions and they get shut down.
Yeah.
But that's the doorway. That's what they're giving you. Walk right through and look into their world and see what it's like and not be scared of that, because it's okay and it's natural and actually means your kid is really vibrant and brilliant probably.
Oh, I love that so much. I definitely feel a little bit intimidated by the teen years because I've never parented a teen before. So even just hearing you say that, I'm like, phew, okay, I've got this. And I mean, we don't even do school, but I'm already seeing glimmers coming through with my 9-year-old. Like, you know, even yesterday in the car, we were driving along and he was just like, rolling his eyes at some of the things I was saying. I'm like, oh my God, it's coming.
It's happening.
Yeah, but it's, and I also, just back to what you said, it's probably likely that, you know, a lot of us didn't have that type of connection from our parents when we were teens because our parents were probably working, they were tired, like this life of being separated from each other was really normalized, and there wasn't much space to really sit with each other and connect because our parents might have not known how to do that or known anything about teen development or, you know, teen life or anything like that. So I feel like for a lot of us, it's such an edge to walk and feels really unnatural to do that.
It feels, I think, almost wrong. Like we're like you're doing something bad almost. I know at least I've heard that from some parents, and I can imagine that they could feel that way sometimes. Even I feel that way sometimes when I'm meeting teenagers in the moment that they're in, and I have to consciously see those patterns that I was handed. Absolutely, for sure. It was all behavioral lens and grades and all of this stuff that doesn't matter. And also, like you said, doesn't honor the developmental stage. And we're not saying no boundaries and passive parenting. Absolutely not. I had no boundaries and passive permissive parenting, and I seeked out really unhealthy relationships as a result of that. And so we're not talking about 100,000,000% free range, no care. This is deeply intentional and loaded with awareness. And yeah, I think maybe previous generations didn't quite have that perspective, at least. And we're really, you're pioneering, you and your friends and everybody who's even curious about this idea are pioneering, even though it's like a returning to what's more natural and maybe what's more common if we look back on the history of humans. But still, it's a big deal. It is so backwards, upside down feeling. Like, wait, I'm supposed to just listen to my teen complain and enable it, is what it feels like.
Yeah, totally. I can see how that would feel like that. I would definitely feel like that. Yeah, even, you know, because we don't do school. Sometimes, even if my son is complaining, I'm like, what? We just spent the whole day at the beach. We just spent the whole day like hanging out with your friends. Like, what do you mean? And I have to check myself sometimes because I'll just be like, you need to be grateful. Like, you have this amazing life. And I'm like, it's just not, that's just his normal. I've created this to be his normal. And he's just a normal human developing as he's meant to be developing. So I need to check myself sometimes. And he's only 9. So I can, yeah, that's going to amplify. And it's really, yeah, it's just amazing to have so much integrated information at our fingertips now through social media and accounts like yours. And you know, even just a tile. I read something that you posted the other day about teen sleep. And I was like, oh my God, it was such a huge aha moment for me. I was like, I can't believe teens are forced onto this like school schedule when they should be sleeping. And I remember sleeping a lot. My parents were actually pretty great with school. Like, I didn't really go as much as I should, and they were pretty cool with that, which is great. But I just remember I had days where I couldn't even drag myself out of bed. And I thought there was something wrong with me, even though my parents were like, stay home, you know? Yeah. And I don't know, that post that you made just really like lit something up in me. I'm like, man, teens need to be just supported to develop
Yeah, it's
without pressure.
their bodies and their brains alone are going through the most massive transformation physically, emotionally, energetically. It's just
Spiritually
massive.
as well, like the
Spiritually, for sure. Yeah, exactly. And it's actually so wild. I think about it a lot, right? A baby, we're like, oh, the baby and the naps and the baby needs all the sleep. And it's like, exactly. And so does this age and that age and this age. And the sleep changes and the needs change. And that is human development. That's brain development and that's child development. And so it's like, let's go back to the basics. And there is a way to do it. You know, some schools start later and it's a big, big, big help for teenagers. And a lot of them do feel like there's something, a lot of people I know, a lot of teens I know do think there's something wrong with them that they can't fall asleep at night and they feel all this pressure and the weight of the world and anxiety. And it's partly because they're so sleep deprived and have been for years. That's the reality.
And that must affect their hormone development like massively as well. They'd just be in a total state of like fight flight all the time and so much cortisol in their body. And I mean, I don't even know that much about that stuff, but that's my first thought. I'm like, oh my God, how can they have like balanced hormones if they're not sleeping.
Yeah, it affects metabolism, mood, their brain for sure, which is, of course, there's all kinds of stuff going on up there. And yeah, it's one of the, I think there is a movement more towards looking at physiology, not just psychology, which is important. We can't keep separating all these pieces. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to do that. The body doesn't do that. And getting back to basics of, yeah, nutrition, rest, and connection. I mean, if we all had this during our teen years, it would be a different world.
Oh my goodness, it would. Yeah, absolutely. I just, it's just baffling that this information is out there, and there's, at least in Australia, it's probably similar in the US. I'm not seeing any movement towards catering to that for teens at all. I see more pressure being applied to teens to succeed and operate on this timeline that is like moving towards a world that's not even going to exist for them.
No, it's not.
It's so absurd.
It's so absurd, right? College is going to become obsolete, at least to some degree, right? Because for so many reasons, it's going to become free online. We're already seeing a lot of changes. It's still slow, in my opinion, because it's like a big machine, but all this stuff is starting to shift. And while at the same time, there is that SAT pressure and all this testing stuff, which again, fine, if you want to be a doctor and you're type A, go for it. Absolutely. We need all the kinds of people.
Yeah,
in the
totally.
World.
That's
important, but not everybody is that kind of person. And it's really important to honor all the learners. I mean, I'm 40. So during my high school years, I remember we started seeing trades getting cut and the push towards spending $1 million freaking going to college. And then, you know, half the people don't even use their degree, right? It's like, you
Me?
Don't even know who you are yet. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's so common.
Yeah.
It's so common. And now, I mean, it doesn't mean you can't go to college. It doesn't mean, again, that we don't want to allow for this. But as you said, the world is changing so much, and what we've been in isn't really even going to exist in the same way.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing with your son, I don't want to forget it, with the comments or the complaining, is one perspective. If parents want to try this out, is that that's your child maturing into deeper perspectives, emotions, experiences, and actually processing them out loud and asking for feedback about that, right? Even if it's seen as negative, or it is negative, it's still, again, that doorway. And there could be a way to be like, oh, what didn't you like about today? Because you might find out their friend did something mean, or they felt embarrassed, or they were jealous or mad. And all these kind of bigger emotions are coming online in a bigger way. And they actually need help walking through that. Like, this is their first time, really, as they get older, feeling it in this new way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's almost like sometimes I can see that in his body. Like, I can see that he's having this intense new experience or this new feeling, and he's not quite sure how to process it. So it comes out in this like moment of rage or this deep frustration, or yeah. And my first reaction still most of the time is I feel triggered by it. And I might say something that's just completely unhelpful. And I at least can catch myself and inquire deeper, but I'm noticing these new triggers that I haven't experienced probably since toddlerhood with him, you know. But it's on a different level now because he's older, obviously, and he can articulate himself better, and we can have different types of conversations. But yeah, it's like, it's a wild moment. Yeah. And I know through Steiner philosophy, it's like going over the Rubicon. It's like they're starting to take those steps away from the parents' field and dipping their toe in the big world out there. And I love that perspective because I can see it. It makes me feel like, you know, it is really scary for them. You know, it's they're having this spiritual expansion and they really want it, but it's like, oh, dip a toe in, come back to the mother's field or the parents' field, dip a toe in. And they're processing those little toe dips all the time. And
they really
wild.
Are. It's absolutely wild. It's so, that lens brings, I feel like, deep compassion for all parties involved, right? It's like, it is, it's really meaningful, and it does bring up a lot. And there's this reason why we used to have those sort of coming of age experiences with support and having, because you're, it's that butterfly out of cocoon eventually too. And this is not easy. That's not easy to do. It's full of grief and excitement and fear and strength. I mean, it's all these kind of conflicting in some ways emotions, again, for everybody involved, not just the teen, not just the parent.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Even my son feels that sometimes. He's like, I just want to like be little again. Or he'll see us. We've got two other smaller kids and they're, you know, they get such a different type of attention from us most of the time because they're so little. And I sometimes he's like, oh, I just want that. So I give that to him as well. But
nice. Good.
Yeah, it's just such a wild ride. I was going to ask you a little bit about teen development, just in a nutshell, and what you like for people listening who are on the precipice of parenting teens or already have teens, what is it like for boys and girls? Because I often hear boys develop differently to girls and girls go through this shift earlier. And I know that that information can feel confusing and everybody's different, but is there a way that you can speak to that, like in a nutshell, that might support parents to connect with their boys and girls? Or is that just a myth? I don't know.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, there's sort of foundational stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, of course, boys and girls have different hormones. And so there's some different stuff happening and different timelines. And then within that, there's a lot of nuance. The child themselves, the dynamic at home, and all of that individual kind of unique stuff that can be there.
Mm-hmm.
Even with one kid, it can look very different every day, right? Like Monday to Friday, there could be lots of kind of varied experiences, especially if the child's sleep deprived. So just to kind of frame it a little bit. And I think we can start with the foundational, which is their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed yet. That takes a lot of time. It's like into your mid 20s, at least from what we know now. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's all about planning consequences. Just tasky stuff. And so if your kid forgets their lunch and doesn't remember to do their homework, especially if something's not important to them, that's kind of natural. That's prefrontal cortex stuff. And then along with that, the limbic system in the brain is super online, which is about, it's all the emotions. That's why you see kind of big feelings, maybe what even people would describe as drama or intensity from their teen. It's not because they're like trying to be a drama queen. It's because of what's happening in their brain. And they're learning how to navigate these emotions. And we learn it by navigating our emotions. Like that's how we do it. And so walking them through, being by their side, so they can actually feel in their bones and in their hearts and through experience that nothing lasts forever.
Mm.
A lot of this stuff is temporary. For us too, as adults, it can be overwhelming to feel uncomfortable feelings, but we at least have some awareness from our experience that it eventually ends. But we can't just tell a teen that. We kind of have to be with them in that so they can really feel it and feel held through it so they can learn to trust themselves and trust the process.
Mm.
So this is really important. I think those two things alone, just the prefrontal cortex and the limbic system, are just massive. And if we know about that, it can really bring a lot of awareness and compassion and intention to those moments.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people are feeling that right now. I was just feeling like thinking there's no space for like initiation in our culture or to honor that rite of passage of moving with that. Is there?
Yeah.
And yeah, if even that existed in the slightest way, that would support teens so much to sit with the process and feel safe to be with the process. Mm.
I think about this all the time and wonder how it can be done in bigger ways. And some of it might be individual with the parents. And there's a big difference, you know, just to point out between saying, oh, this is just your hormones. And then saying that to a teen or being like, yeah, this is rough. And I'm with you. And we're going to be together while it passes. Those are very different ways of saying the same thing. And I think it's really important that parents get in touch with, no matter how far away you feel from your teen, you do have this innate inner compass there to guide you, because it's not about the perfect word. However, words and energy do matter. And there's different ways to say the same thing, and some will land much better than others.
Yeah. And just to be seen and validated in your experience is everything, right? And to have that happen in such a big time in your life sets the foundation for adulthood, right? I think it's hard for so many parents, like I said before, because we didn't all have that. So we're trying to heal ourselves and create that for ourselves and hold space for our teens whilst doing so. And it's such a big work. Sometimes I feel like my generation, I would say I'm an elder millennial, maybe.
Me too.
We're
yep.
kind of like on the front line of that. You know, we've come through and, you know, bless our parents, but they didn't have the tools to be able to do this necessarily. And so, yeah, so many days I'm just like, oh my God, I've got to do this healing and I've got to hold space for my kids and I don't have a village. And it just feels so huge sometimes. And I'm sure a lot of listeners out there can really, you know, resonate with that. But I feel like it's about those moments where you do actually connect, support you to create more moments where you do connect. And doing that with your child is the healing as well.
It's the healing. Yeah. And the teen years and the tween years, it's sometimes really quality over quantity, especially if you have 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds and, you know, that are kind of off and about or maybe driving. So remembering it's not like, oh, a whole day together that's perfect. I mean, that'd be great. And sometimes it's a tiny little response to their frustration, their whatever, that is so huge and impactful and helps them trust you. Yeah. And so if you don't have all the time in the world, that's okay. If your kid still is in whatever school and it's not ideal, that's also okay. There are ways to meet them in these moments and yourself too, because they're what I feel like maybe is also happening for a lot of people is that not only are you raising your teen and yourself, but you're also having to forgive your parents. I mean, this is part of the work too, or feel mad at them and go through that process. And, you know, that's a whole other thing. And so not everybody's necessarily in that, but I know that it's relevant for plenty. And so that's a lot to be happening at once. Add perimenopause or something else.
Oh
and
my
you know,
God.
Whatever.
Very likely if you've got a teen, unless you had kids when you were really young. Yeah. That's going to be me in a few years, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At least for one of my kids, it's such a wildly non-linear and full unraveling that we're going through. But I feel like these generations of kids that are coming through are demanding that from us because they're going to inhabit this world that we can't even fathom. Their soul knows what's going on. They're like, all right, come on, get your shit together. Like, we need you guys to show up now because that old paradigm, that old way doesn't work for us. It's not relevant. We're creating something more connected. We're creating something new. We're here to heal and, you know, liberate. And sometimes I'm just like, oh my God, that is like so, that's a lot for my little schooled self. And, you know, but also I'm up for it because I believe in these kids. I believe that they're really here to shake shit up. And I mean, every generation is, but I think that there's been a significant shift in recent years towards something very different to what we've experienced in our own lives. And that's so comforting. I've noticed so many more families are choosing a different path outside of school because of this kind of thing, so that they can support their children's development and heal their own wounds, whatever those are. And that's really positive, especially in through the lens of homeschooling and unschooling. It's really beautiful to see.
Well, you have control over, I mean, control might not even be the best word, but the influences are different than they are at a school. And even if you don't have like a huge homeschool community, it's like there's this level of intentionally kind of curating or surrounding your child with what you feel like is most supportive for their age, their stage, their unique personality, and what they're into. I mean, gosh, the amount of kids I know that are just not studying what they're so good at is honestly heartbreaking for me.
Yes.
And they like want to do this thing and they can't. There's no time. They're too tired. School won't allow it. They can't even ask a freaking question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder why at 18, 19, or even earlier, they're like apathetic. It's like, hello, we've been saying stop, don't for how long? in schools, for example, this is really common, not every school, not every teacher, but it's really common because there's a system in place and it's about grades and marks and it has a whole other agenda.
Yeah.
And that agenda is not necessarily serving humanity. And so when I hear teens say, I don't want to do this, I can't wake up for this, why am I doing this? This is stupid. That's that magic that you were just talking about. That's that wisdom. That's that new earth stuff.
Yeah.
And as long as it's like safe, you know, where our job is to offer this safe, steady ground for them to be themselves in and amidst and grow through.
I feel like
interrupting that natural process.
Yes. It's hard. Like you said, it's so heartbreaking. And when suppressing that becomes the norm, that's a really big problem. I've seen it. I used to work as I don't even know what my job title really was, artist in residence, educator. I wasn't a teacher, but I worked in schools when my son was little. And I remember it so vividly. I worked with his kindy class and we were making a mural together. And pretty much all of the kids said, I can't paint, I can't draw. And my heart shattered into a million pieces. I'm like, you're five.
Five.
Like, that's your first language. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And I was so much of that became about supporting them, trying to support them to feel confident in their first language, drawing, painting. But I just couldn't get there. Once they have that core belief, it is really hard to, you know, in that environment. Maybe if we took them out of that environment, it would be different. But in that space, in that 1 hour I had, I was like, I feel like I'm pushing shit uphill. Like, you already think this about yourself and you are like, yeah, if that spark is gone at age five, like, what's going to happen in your life?
That's that genius, right?
Yeah,
that spark, that genius, whatever we want to call it, that human spirit. At five, that is when there should be no wondering if I'm doing this right or wrong, right? That's just, that's unnatural. And that shows how much the society has impacted what's natural at that stage. And then, of course, on top of that, it's like, well, don't be scared. And then we're telling them don't to feel how they feel. And then it's like, so it just layers on top of shit after shit after shit, right? Because then it's like, I'm wrong for even feeling this, even though like I've been told to be critical of myself and that I can't do it. And it's so much for a little five-year-old. It's just crazy. So, I mean, I have similar memories. I first went to college to study teaching. And after one semester, I was like, I'm going to get fired. Like, I will for sure get fired if I'm ever a teacher because of what I knew to be true about children and what it was not focusing on. I mean, already just in one semester, it was clear what the whole thing was about.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely just gutting.
That's so funny because I had the exact same experience. I went to university to study to be an art teacher and I quit the teaching part of the degree after one semester because I was like, this is stupid.
Me too. Yeah, so same, because I'm also an artist. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Uh-huh.
I completed my art degree, which I loved it, but I mean, it's the most unemployable thing ever. But I did love going to university because I got to create every day. The teaching part, I was like, oh my God. Like, and I actually went back to do an observation prac at my old high school because I was still very connected to that part of my life at that time.
Yeah.
And I remember going into the staff room. I did it with my old art teacher who I loved, but I went into the staff room at lunchtime and all of the teachers were bitching about their jobs. They were like bitching about the kids. They were saying such harsh things about some of the kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, just eating really rubbish food. The microwave was like going off.
Ugh.
And it was just, that was the moment for me. I was like, this is horrible. Like, you guys hate life. You hate your job. You'd hate the kids that you're teaching. Like, no wonder the kids hate school. Like,
they're
not inspired. You aren't inspired. And like, I get why they're not. They're underpaid, overworked. There's like so many, like you said, so nuanced. But it was like such an awakening for me. I'm like, there is no way I am ever stepping foot in this environment. Like, I've got so much more to offer the world. But yeah, it was a big realization.
Eye-opening.
Yeah.
That's again, like trusting what we're actually seeing and connecting the dots. And it's like, of course, the kids feel like crap. The adults feel like crap. The adults set the tone. and the system sets the tone, and it's toxic. And so honestly, again, when your kid's complaining about how awful it is, good on them. They know what's good and not good for them. This is really into themselves. Important.
And it's really our job important to validate that for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Rudolf Steiner speaks about that as well, about the psychic awareness of children. And it's just so activated, obviously, when they're kids, because they, especially when they're little, because they haven't had anybody steer them away from that. And it's still probably so activated in those times in life where they go through these huge transitions, like teenagehood. They're having a massive spiritual awakening. So their psychic awareness is probably amplified during that time, which is probably why they're complaining so much, because we live in a world that doesn't support them.
It doesn't support them. And even some communities will, that gets hijacked, that big evolution that's happening. It can get hijacked and channeled improperly and unhealthily. Mm-hmm. And it's rough. And I mean, I had a similar kind of realization at one point when I was working as a therapist. Back in the day, I'm not a therapist anymore, but in a school, and there was a meeting I was part of, and the teachers were saying, she is not doing her work. She is failing her class. Like, she does not take this seriously, about this 14, 15-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you know what this week is the anniversary of? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, she survived cancer, and this is her 1-year anniversary. No one's thinking about these things. In the school, or very few people, I should say.
Yeah.
And even with that, and it's not to say like, oh, then you get a free, it's not about free passes. It's understanding the full picture here. And even with that information, it just barely like landed, you know, in any meaningful way, and very briefly. Mm. And it was just, I'm like, this is backwards.
Yeah.
Her where she is, and create some space for that.
Totally. And like, support
it's her. Amazing that she's here.
Totally. And I've just got so much to say about things like that. It comes back to that holding space through rites of passage, holding space through initiations, holding space through these massive transformations. It's like our ancestors did it. It's in us. We know how to do it. It's kind of like, how do we reactivate that in a way that like normalizes that for our young people? You know, we have to do that for ourselves. It feels really unnatural most of the time, because we didn't have that when we were growing up. Like when a woman gets her first period, like usually it's like, oh, here's a pad, here's a tampon, off you go, oh well, you know. But that's such a significant moment in a woman's life. Like, she's fertile. Yes. Like, and that means that her creativity, the creative force, is like fucking amplified. It's not just about making baby.
Right.
And it's just like brushed under the rug, or there's like shame around it. And man, I reckon every woman on earth carries that with her in some way, unless she's been properly held through that initiation. And like that carries through every other initiation, through her womanhood, through her, if she has a baby, through her fertility years. Even if she doesn't have a baby, when she goes through moments in her life where she's embodying the mother archetype, like, you know, that comes through, and it's just completely disregarded. Girls are forced to be active or go to school or not rest when they're on like the first few days of their bleed. I remember that. I remember like wagging PE class because I was bleeding and I felt really tired and I didn't want to go, but I didn't want to tell my teacher that I was bleeding because I knew that she wouldn't care, or I was scared that she wouldn't care. And I think back to some of those moments and I'm like, wow, I was really like, wasn't safe for me to honor the natural rhythm of my body. And so I had to do all of these other things to create safety for myself.
Including not telling the teacher, because that didn't feel safe, which is probably, you were probably right. It probably wouldn't have gone how you would need it to go. Right.
Yeah.
Because of what you're talking about. We're deep in now, generations of being so separate from what is natural, because I can like see almost in a way, like I'm remembering what it was like to be in circle, and maybe because I've been in ceremony and been in circles, but there's something that can never be lost once we tap back into it, of being in circle or ceremony, sweat lodge, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just always there for us to choose with the right people in the right way, all that stuff. And same with little, medium, and big ways to initiate ourselves and our children through then again, the natural stages that are truly miraculous if we step back. And instead of like, oh, we need to stop it or get on the pill so this doesn't happen so you can go to school, that, all that stuff. If we just like pause for a second, it's a miracle. And actually, it's really important because we have serious fertility issues now in the world. Yeah. And so this is like a, not only a personal thing, a beautiful, a spiritual, a female thing. It's like, and then there's also the male version of this, but it has big impacts.
Yeah.
Big ripples.
And it's an opportunity to really tap into the natural cycles of our own bodies and our, then the connection of those with the earth, and use that, harness that as a way to create what we want to create, because that's what it is essentially. And there's just, this is just completely bypassed in mainstream culture, which is obvious, but there is definitely, I mean, again, I do live in a bubble, but I feel like the bubble is expanding and there is more awareness out there to support young women through this rite of passage in that way to be, it's, and you know, it becomes less about baby making and preventing baby making, and more about connection with the body and using that to be able to call in or not call in what's true for you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yes, we might be in bubbles and ripples of truth can't be stopped. And there's also the truth for the boys and the young men, which is they have a calling too, and it looks different. And this is why I think school is especially sometimes challenging for boys, because it's like, sit and be quiet and don't move. And it's like, there's, again, I'm generalizing because not every boy is wired exactly the same, but to create, to break down, to reconstruct, to keep people safe, to be strong, like there's all these, I mean, along with also feeling their feelings and learning how to communicate, blah, 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 right? This is just true for all humans, but there are these really significant stages of boyhood that are also being bypassed or even demonized.
Yes. At this point. Yes. Yeah. I see that all the time. I look at my son sometimes. I'm like, there's no way you could sit at a desk all day. He's just constantly flapping about the place and moving and wanting and like wrestling and just doing stuff with his body constantly. And it's just like, there's no, I can't do that to you. Like,
no,
it would crush him. And I just think of all of the young boys out there who are experiencing school and having that part of their expression completely crushed and demonized.
It's crushed. It's crushed. It's demonized. Yep. It's like you are bad and wrong. And really, there's so much magic in those impulses, and they need proper instruction and mentoring and guidance and channeling and expression and adventure and fun. And it's become a like a disease and a diagnosis.
Oh yeah. And
it's it's just again, it's like another kind of heartbreaking lens when we really pan out and go, what's actually happening here? And what's actually needed here? And again, every kid is different, but there's some general themes, and it's kind of wild that we're out of place. Maybe it's shifted. Maybe people are just seeing what's real now, but it doesn't feel like the broader system of school necessarily understands this yet, which is so interesting, because you would think that given being trained to work with children, there would be this emphasis on child development.
Like it's not true even, child development. It's not even in Australia. I don't know about over in the US, but it's probably similar again. It's not even in the curriculum of like the degree. There's like a micro dose of it, and it's very, very general and
watered down for sure.
Yeah. And it's more like emphasizes on consequences or for very natural behaviors. It's so wrong. And so
it's so,
it's
wrong. It actually just is, it's not okay. And we are seeing the results of this. I mean, in this country, young men are really struggling to know where they belong and what their skills are. They feel like they don't have purpose, belonging, meaning. And that is actually so critical for young men to feel all those things, that they belong and they have a purpose and that they're included and that they're supposed to be here and that they're mm-hmm. welcome and that they're amazing. I mean, all humans, this is, if we don't have that, it's like, yeah, what is the point? Nothing yeah. is sacred. And I'm just yeah. going through the motions. And it's like, it's a miracle to wake up every day. That's the reality. And
yeah.
I don't know any system that honors that, especially yeah. the school system.
Oh my goodness. No, it's not even, it's just, you're punished constantly in the school system. You just really have to stay like in line in order to like make it through. But even then, if you like, if you have your rose colored glasses on and you had a great time, or you think you had a great time, it's, you probably had a mask on. You're probably performing in order to be able to survive. It's, there's so much unraveling when you start the de-schooling process, and it's really confronting because it forces you to like really see things for what they are and accept that you've actually probably been abused in a lot of ways, absolutely. Like throughout your childhood, and taken away from that connection to your truth and your true expression. A lot of adults I work with, I'm an artist, and sometimes I do like creative courses with adults with the intention of helping them remember their creativity. And it's really hard. It's so hard for a lot of adults to find that again. You know, they're often saying, oh, I'm not creative. I don't know how to show up for my kid and support them to be creative. I don't know how to set activities for them to create. And I'm like, oh man, like, where do I even start with that? That's a long time to be disconnected from your creativity, which is actually just like the most innate natural thing within us. It's like the one thing that we all have in common is that we're breathing and that we're creative. Yes. And oh, that's like, you know, school just really suppresses that as early as possible. And it's getting worse. In Australia, they've taken all creative subjects out of schools, unless the school is a creative school or there's a teacher that emphasizes that. But then even if that happens, it's in a very minuscule time frame. So kids can't really fully immerse in those experiences. Yeah,
It's an assault on our spirit. And like you said, the most innate part of us. And I know that that's what I lived for in school, was the creative classes. And I, again, was so fortunate to have creative, an amazing art teacher all through high school specifically. And even in middle school, it was very encouraged, and I knew I was good at it, and not good at it, like doing it right, but it was that it was important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And with my own unraveling of my experiences, because I went to college for 7 years. I mean, I got my master's and I was a therapist and all that stuff. The unraveling of how I was lied to, in not only in the information I was taught, but that I had to do this and it was the only path to a good life and all this stuff. Complete lies, complete nonsense. I could have done this without any of that. There were some parts of it. I loved my internships. And I made great friends, and I actually did have some great teachers. However, some of the stuff that I saw go down in college was, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. Certain people silence, unable to say certain things because it wasn't what the school thought was the only way or the right way or the truth. Yeah. The lack of critical thinking and nuanced conversations, when I think back, is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And then some stuff that happened in my training, and then in my time as a therapist too, just the lack of understanding of human nature and how to meet people in the moment. And if, you know, some of this is based on, what was his name? William Miller, his motivational interviewing work is that I think it's up to 70% of a client or a person's ability to change and evolve is directly related to their relationship with their helper, or the person standing by their side. Mm-hmm. So this isn't like a technique per se. This is like a way of being.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. And I held on to that. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I'm just thinking like in the context of school, where kids are just like immersed in this like peer attachment space. Like, yeah, that's just a recipe for disaster, isn't it? Like,
totally.
Yeah.
Where am I? Who's the leader? And where do I fit in here? And I don't know, there's so much, of course, unnatural about it all. And unfortunately, I think we are awakening to a lot of this stuff. And it doesn't mean you can't get through it for anyone listening that might be part of those schooling systems. But of course, so many obstacles are out of the way when you're not in that box.
Yeah.
And there's so much less you have to undo later.
Yeah.
The work that you have done, and I know I have done, to unravel some belief systems and some straight up again lies, and just it's a lot of work and it's expensive.
Right? It's relentless.
It's relentless. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, can I just press a pause button for a while?
Well, we can understand why some people don't do it.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes I'm like, man, maybe I could just get like a average job, and I totally go there because some days I feel really overwhelmed by it. But what it has done though is supported us to create a different path, and we're really thriving on our new created path now. But those first few years were like, oh my God, what have we signed up for? It's really in our face, like all of this conditioning. But what we're seeing now, that especially now that our son is 9 and we've been unschooling him since, you know, his whole life, I guess, is how that's paid off and how that's supporting him. Like the way that he shows up as himself in the world, and just the way that he feels so free to express himself, and the way he interacts with people in the community, is just really telling that we're on the right path for us and on the right path for him. Yeah. But I guess
that's the way to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing it. So
I'm seeing it. It's taken a few years. I'm like, oh my God. But now there's no other way. Like I couldn't even imagine engaging in that system. And I think making the decision to step away from that can feel really scary because it's all we've ever known. And it is really challenging, but the more that we can cultivate the courage to do that and just keep taking little steps, the easier it becomes. And the more that we can see it for what it is, and I can even identify like what belongs to me and what doesn't belong to me. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe like that was in me. That's not mine. And knowing that because we're doing that work, our children won't have to do that work. And that's breaking such a huge curse through, you know, for our family. And for us, it's all about supporting our kids to stay connected to their creativity. Like that's our number one, you know, belief in our family, is that we just want to protect our kids' connection to their creativity at all costs. Because we believe that if they have that intact, then they can go out into the world and create whatever they want to create and feel safe to do so. It sounds so much easier than it is.
Well, there might be moments where it actually maybe does feel easy, whether it's because, you know, your ancestors are there, there's this invisible support network, or because you're in a groove of it, or because you see the fruits of the roots, you know, so to speak. My husband has a saying about time. He's like, time used to equal money, or at least that's what some people thought. And now it's like time equals creativity.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, when those obstacles or that work that you're talking about that your kids don't have to do because you're doing it, they get to do other work. They get to then stand on your shoulders and see a little higher and not have to kind of deal with that stuff, right? Because you've thoroughly done that. And that's like a clear blue sky, or like, you know, it's a totally different view.
I love that. That's beautiful. I would love to hear, you know, what you would say to parents who have teens who have been through school and they've been through that, you know, that system, been demonized, all the things, and are considering taking their kids out of school. Because I talk to parents a lot who are fed up, they're done, and they're ready to pull their kids out of school. But then obviously there's that huge integration process or de-schooling process. And I feel like the longer you're in school, the harder that might be. Have you worked with many parents who are on that path? Yeah.
Yeah, I've worked with several families who have realized it's not working. It's not worth it. And then we're not going to do this anymore. And for myself, like I said, I was in college for 7 straight years. It felt like dying when I woke up to everything. And I'm not, and I wasn't even raising a child. This was myself. This is just me. And so that was a lot. And so it can feel that big, especially if we're talking about, you know, your child's future or just what are my parents going to think and all the things that come up or can come up. And I think there's a few ways to look at it. One is talk to someone who's done it in your community, maybe because they've already kind of had to do all the research of the best program, how to make it seamless, smooth, easy, because there's like a logistical piece sometimes. Some communities, some countries. And so if that's a thing, just like find that easiest way, like who's done it, give me the 1, 2, 3 kind of, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel or like figure it out. Cause that just can feel really intense on top of all the emotions. And then also within that, I would say find the people that get it. I've been the only person for some families that are cheering them on because grandparents don't get it, friends don't get it, everyone's worried and concerned. And I'm not pushing the family to do it. They've decided. And I'm like, I will be with you in this decision and support you because you've made this choice and it's right. You've decided this is right for your family. And I'm here to listen to any and all of it, right? The moments of doubt, the frustration, the fear, and find the people that can hold space for that because it can feel really dark and it can feel really scary and lonely. Like you're walking into this onto a path that's not even a path. It's like some forest with all this like messy stuff you have to cut away or something. So finding those people, finding this,
it's so funny. I wrote that in my journal yesterday about finding the path. I'm like, it's so overgrown sometimes.
Where is it?
Yeah,
it can feel like that. It's like, where is the stable ground? Where am I? What planet is this? It can feel that confusing. And so it can be a lot. And then for some families, it's probably just like, yes, we're finally here. This is so exciting. And so you might need to find people that are excited with you. Right. And so again, it depends on so many things. And it depends if your kid is resistant or if they're stoked, right? That's a whole different thing depending on where they are.
Yeah, totally. And that's just so individual for each child, depending on the circumstances of wanting to leave school or not wanting to leave school. But it is a thing, like unplugging from that system it's such a process. And I think sometimes parents don't realize how big that is because the way that the body has to protect itself to survive in that system, it's like deregulated all the time, or it's like really in this heightened state of like fight, flight. And that's just like a person's norm until they rest, until they unplug and feel safe to go slow or safe to experience life more on their frequency. It's a really big transition for a lot of kids and can feel, like you said, rough for a while and cause parents to kind of question, am I doing the right thing? Or
And you're going to bump into people that, I mean, it's like that fish in water. The fish doesn't know it's surrounded by water. It's like the fish.
Oh, my toddler's just arrived. My partner's coming to get him. I thought he was going to bust
great.
In. I'll edit that.
No problem. That's okay. That's okay. But it's, you're reminding me of kind of that metaphor of the fish doesn't know it's in water, so to speak. It's just like, what do you mean I'm surrounded by water? You don't even know sometimes. We don't. I've been in these places before too. You don't know, and you don't know until we pop out.
Or like I often think, you know, the cage door is always open.
Yes.
And that's always how I felt when I fully started to see everything for what it is. I was like, I've always been free.
Always.
A cage door's always been open. I didn't really come into that until I was in my mid-30s, I reckon, like fully. And I was like, oh my God. And that brought up so much grief. I was like, wow. I've got to like really sit with this for a while because, I was like, what did I do in my 20s? Like, I was just dissociating my whole 20s, going out, getting wasted, taking drugs and thinking I was free, having a great time. But what I was actually doing was like processing and dissociating and just like trying to make sense of what had just happened to me for the last 17 years. Yeah. And that's so normalized in our culture. And yeah, I just think the sooner you can get your little people away from that.
If you can do it, do it. Also, these schools are going to become obsolete at some point because no one's going to do this anymore because it is so harmful. And I was the same way in my 20s. I nearly died. I was totally dissociated. All kinds of stuff was happening. And it did. And then there was massive grief. And that the door is always open. And that's a lot too, because again, what we've been instructed is to not step out of line, not take care of ourselves. And so even entertaining that idea can feel like you're going to get in trouble. You're bad. And so this is what's so beautiful about conversations and communities and this truth, deeper truth we're talking about, because we all deserve so much better. Yeah. And if this generation doesn't have to go through all that, there's, of course, we're all going to struggle. This is part of how we grow and build resilience as humans. But unnecessary suffering is a whole other thing.
I hear you. And yeah, just understanding what's been normalized really often falls into that category. It isn't in the best interests of our creative spirit.
No, and I think kids know, to what your point, many points you've made in this conversation, many times you've said it, that whether it's them complaining or their wild movements, it's like, that's how I hear and see teenagers when they're struggling, is that something in them knows this is not okay. That's how I choose to see that. Not that they have a problem, not that there's something wrong with them, not that they have bad behavior. They know that this isn't working and they're actually begging for our help.
And if a parent who's listening has a teen that is in that space, is what's your advice for them? Is it just sitting down with them and validating what they're feeling, or is there anything else that's helpful? I don't know. I don't have teens, so I'm kind of asking for myself as well.
Really being as curious as you can possibly be. And not to fix it necessarily immediately unless it's an emergency, but usually it's not like an emergency, right? It might be important and definitely requires your attention. And so give it that. Be curious, right? What's really hard about this? What's not working for you? Gather that information with an open heart and an open mind, because then you can actually tease out what's really going on. Some teens actually just need to complain about the day, but they actually really like going to school. That's just true for some families. A lot of other teens are like, I can't do this anymore, especially these days. It's just happening more and more. And so what can't you do? Like, let's look at this. What are you noticing that's not working? Do you feel it in your body? What are you thinking about? All that kind of stuff, just getting really curious, and not like interrogation style, just truly like a friend would be curious about another friend's hard day. What happened? What was it like for you? What did they say? What, oh my God, what did that feel like? Really just meeting that moment. If your child has so graciously, generously given you that moment to complain to you, is again how I see these moments. I know they're difficult, and I know they're hard, and I know parents are stressed. And if they are telling you this, they want you, they need you, they're trusting you, they're like asking you to be part of their situation. And if we can go in curious, kind of stoic in a way, because you don't want to like add fuel to the fire, they're already stressed and dysregulated. Be that stable ground. You can like look at it together, almost like something in your hands or a sunset. Like, what are we looking at?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And just see what you find.
Yeah. And there doesn't have to be an answer, right? It can just be
not right away.
Yeah.
I think what's scary is like, what if I find out something really bad is happening? Or what if I find out my kid is not okay? And so that's the part that almost holds us. I know there's teens that feel like they have to say, I'm fine, because their parent can't hold it if they're not. And so, and this is what's really hard about parenting these days without community, these separate boxes we're in. It's like, it's not natural to hold everyone's problems all the time, especially if they're really big. And so it can be scary if you're like, wait, am I going to uncover something that's really bad? What will I do? And so know that we can handle it. And when we can't handle it, there's someone we can call to help us.
Yeah. That's so powerful. That's one of the things that we love about unschooling is that all of the people that we hang out with are our friends and their kids. So their kids see us as aunties, parents, and feel safe to come to talk to us. And I know that when they're older, they'll just be that beautiful, like, kind of community and village of kids who have adults in their life that they've known for years through and seen them through their whole entire childhood, that they can feel safe to come to if they need to, or if their parents can't hold something, we can all do it together. And
exactly.
Yeah, just knowing that is just like, oh, it's so, because I didn't have that. I had teachers. I didn't want to talk to my teachers. Like, yeah, it wasn't, that just wasn't a vibe for me. And so just to know that our kids are going to have that is everything. And cultivating that takes work. It takes work. The community doesn't just appear. You have to cultivate that. And you can still do that if your kids are at school. It's, it doesn't have to, but it's not going to happen for you. It's something that we have to do as adults and prioritize. And when our kids can see us doing that, they're going to feel safer. I picture it as like a net of just safe people. Safety
it
net,
is
I guess. And
it is it's a safety net, it's a safety nest, it's this like garden that you can water. And the thing is, like, life is hard anyway. Like, life is hard, not all the time, not every second, but life is going to have its hard moments, everybody. And so we can't avoid that, even though we want to. Honestly, like, I wish we all could. Like, I have a part of me that's like, I wish there were no problems and everything was just like heaven on earth all the time. Like, I think we all maybe at least have a smidgen of that. And we know that that's not going to be every day. And so it will be hard. And how do we want to navigate that? And who do we want around us? And how do we want to be in that?
Yeah. And we get to create that. We totally have a choice as to how we create that in our lives. And that's the magic. That's part of tapping into that creativity. Yeah. And then that just becomes normal for our kids. And I love what you said before, how they just get to go on our shoulders and see the blue sky. That really landed for me.
Imagine that horizon. I mean, I think of it for myself. I'm like, I think sometimes, wow, if I had a me or someone like me, or if my parents had even, you know, I can even go that far back, or if my grandmother had, it's like, and so it can feel emotional. And like, why do we have to do this? Why couldn't other people have done this? Like, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. And also here we are. And it is a lot of work. And I truly believe that what comes from it is, I don't know, it makes it worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And those little tiny moments of pure heaven, because it's like life happens in moments, you know, they're everything. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely everything. And those moments can shape your whole entire reality and give you a whole different perspective and support you to create your future moments in a completely different way, through a completely different lens. Aww.
That's really sad. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad we got to connect today.
I know. I can't wait to get this podcast out into the world, because I, you know, so many of the people I talk to really specifically talking to kids between like, about kids between 0 and 10, but not so much about kids that are older. And I really do feel like teens are kind of forgotten. Yeah. And so when I came across your page, I was like, oh, thank God. Like, someone's there, like being the voice for the teens and supporting us parents to really understand what they're going through in such an integrated way. So thank you so much for the work that you do. And everybody that's listening, I'm going to tag you and tag your page, but I would love you to share where people can find you, or if you have any offerings or courses that parents can do.
I mean, it's really such a pleasure. Like I said before, it's the light of my life, and all these people, you know, who have 0 to 10 year olds will eventually have teenagers. And so that's just inevitable. People can find me at Kirsten Kobabe, or I also have a group, parenting group, and it starts in 2025. And it's an amazing opportunity for people that want to meet other parents that are walking through these gates or have already walked through these gates. And it's also an opportunity to see me 6 hours a month at a rate of 1 hour one-on-one, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of ways to work with me, lots of ways to connect. And I try to answer every comment and DM.
Great. Amazing. Thank you so much for the work that you do and coming on and chatting with me today. I feel like I could just keep going. There's just so much.
We can do it anytime.
Yeah, totally. I'll pop in again maybe in the future and have a whole different perspective. But I really feel like, you know, everybody out there that's doing this work to really intentionally deeply understand children as they go through these massive rites of passage is like what you said before, just rippling these truths out into the world in a way that's going to change everything. And it might not feel like it in the moment, but it really does have such a big impact. So yeah, just thank you so much for all the work you're doing. And thanks for coming on the podcast today.
That was such a beautiful and insightful episode. If you want to connect further with Kirsten Cobabe, you can find her at www.kirstencobabe.com, or you can find her on Instagram at Kirsten Cobabe. You've been listening to the School Free Life podcast. If you want to hear more of the School Free Life podcast, you can find us on all major streaming platforms.